In Smokestack Lightning, Adventures in the Heart of Barbecue Country, Lola's Eric Ellie writes, "We know that barbecue is a metaphor for American culture in a broad sense, and that it is a more appropriate metaphor than any other American food." Well, there is quite a bibliography on American barbecue, and a drool-worthy subset of that is on Texas barbecue. In The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue, Daniel Vaughn writes, "Texans cherish the simplicity that the best barbecue joints in this great state deliver, and many outsiders lucky enough to get a taste of it will return home with a hole in their charred soul." Daniel Vaughn is also the barbecue columnist for Texas Monthly. Yes, they have a barbecue columnist. On the Texas Monthly barbecue website, Vaughn writes, "Texas barbecue, the classic version of which is found primarily in central Texas and distinguished by its use of beef brisket and its indirect smoking method, is superior to all other regional varieties of barbecue. This is an incontrovertible fact." In Legends of Texas Barbecue Kickback, Rob Walsh says of this giant of barbecues, "We love to eat it, we love to make it, and we love to argue about it." Welcome to the Marfa Mondays podcasting project, in which I explore Marfa, Texas, and the greater environs of Far West Texas in 24 podcasts. I'm your host, CM Mayo, and this is podcast number 19, an interview with Israel Campos, award-winning pitmaster and owner of Pody's Barbecue in Pecos. These Marfa Mondays podcasts are apropos of my book in progress, World Waiting for a Dream, A Turn in Far West Texas. It's not a travel guide, but a literary travel memoir, and if you're unfamiliar with the genre, it's a mashup of personal essay, poetic play, history, anthropology, journalism. Some people call it creative nonfiction. I like to call it literary journalism. On my website, cmmayo.com, you can read about some of my previous works in this genre. These include Miraculous Air, Journey of 1,000 Miles Through Baja California, The Other Mexico, and shorter works, including From Mexico to Miramar or Across the Lake of Oblivion. A quick note also about the sound quality in this interview. I recorded this with my iPhone, no special equipment, and inside Pody's Barbecue. So although I edited out what I could, you will hear restaurant noises, including some brisket getting chopped. Near the end of this interview, we go outside to see the barbecue pits. It's a little windy, and you'll hear a sound like the ocean. The ocean out here dried up many millions of years ago. These are trucks roaring by, probably going to or from the oil rigs. Now, for podcast number 19, vegetarians, you might want to skip this one. Israel Campos.
Yes.
You're the pit master at Pody's Barbecue, which is just really, really good.
So you had it.
I had it yesterday. I had the chopped brisket, and today I had the pulled pork sandwich.
Oh, great.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Good.
And so everybody rings the bell when they like it. So I rang the bell yesterday, and I'll ring it when I go out today.
Thank you.
So you guys were the top 50?
Yes, we're in the top 50.
Texas Monthly Barbecue?
Yes, ma'am. We recently made another list, which is the top 100 in the United States. And
wow.
We scored tops in Texas for pulled pork out of, I think the author went to about 365. He visited a barbecue joint every day on his travels throughout the nation. His name's Johnny Fugit, and it's called the best 100 best barbecue joints in the United States.
And you made that list.
We made the top 50, and then for pulled pork, we were fourth in the nation for pulled pork.
Wow, congratulations.
Tops in Texas.
Well, I just ate that.
Yes, yeah.
I just ate that, and it was really, really good.
Yeah.
But it was such a generous portion. I had to ask for a clamshell so I could have the leftover for dinner.
That's great.
Yeah,
thank
you. That's what I do with the chopped brisket. It was so much I couldn't eat it all, so I had it for supper.
Portions are big around Texas.
Yeah.
We try to treat our customers right.
Well, you sure
do. You get
do.
What you pay for.
Well, yeah, it's a good deal. It's a good deal.
Yes,
it's really two meals in one, at least for me.
Yeah.
Maybe for some of the customers I see in here who
big
look
oil
like
field their, guys.
Yeah, they're working in the oil fields. They probably eat the whole thing.
Yeah, they do.
How did you start this?
Well, I started in 2011 after some personal, I guess, setbacks. I got laid off from a job, a government-funded job. Like, in 2011, it was kind of rough. But I didn't have anything to do. I mean, I always work with my hands. And I said, I had already gone to a bunch of barbecue restaurants around the state. Through my travels with a former company that I worked with, I saw this building here that was a former laundromat. It used to be a laundromat here. And I told my wife, I was like, I'm gonna do something risky and take my retirement out and buy it. And I checked on the prices, so I went ahead and bought it. And did a little bit of remodeling. First thing I did, went and bought a big pit. Then later on, used my brother's pit, which we still use.
Is that here in the building?
It's actually outside, right next to the building. It's adjacent to our building.
It's underground?
No. It's a steel barbecue pit. It's a pipe.
It looks like a drum.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll show it to you here.
Okay.
I have that and two other pits that we use for large catering jobs. So, but after that, there was another guy come through here that's kind of changed our whole, I guess, because of the review that he gave us. His name is Daniel Vaughn. He wasn't the editor of Texas Monthly Barbecue just yet. He was an architect out of Dallas that was traveling throughout the state, visiting all different types of barbecue restaurants. So he recommended us to the Texas Monthly people. And then after that, soon after, about a month after he had been here, he got a job offer with Texas Monthly to be their barbecue editor.
I saw that. They have a dedicated barbecue section in every issue.
Yes, and that's Daniel Vaughn. He's a good guy. I've met him several times, and he's part of the reason we're so successful. And the food, of course, and the ladies working here.
So it's your mom and your wife?
My aunt, my sister-in-law, and a family friend.
So it's your family.
Yes, it's my family.
This is really a family business.
Yes.
In this day and age of chain stores everywhere.
Yeah.
That's really special.
Yeah, it is. And we're fortunate. We're blessed to have them here.
Are you from Pecos?
Yes, I was born and raised here.
So you've seen changes in the town.
Oh, yes, tremendously. Yeah, the oil field is... While I've been alive, I was born in 74. We've gone through two oil booms. The first one, back in the early to mid-80s, came and went. And we learned from that because there was a lot of investing done and a lot of bad investments done by a bunch of different groups. And the money was spent really quick. Now, in this next boom, this boom that we're going through right now, people seem to have invested a little bit smarter and more slower about wasting their money or spending their money. Wiser. Learn from the first one. But, I mean, I've seen an increase in traffic, increase in housing being built. Houses hadn't been built like they're being built now. Hotels and apartment complexes like they're going up now.
Yeah, there's La Quinta and Holiday Inn and Motel 6 and just about all the major chain hotels are out there and RV parks. And well, in your restaurant, I was here yesterday and here I am today. It was so good, I had to come back.
We're glad to have you.
Well, it really was good. And it's packed
every day? Yes, every day.
It's absolutely packed.
We sell out every day. We make a limited amount, but it's enough to keep us going, pay
so
the bills.
So you're open from 11 to 2:30?
Yes, or until we sell out. Generally about 1:30, 1:45 on a busy day. Sometimes it occurred that we were sold out by about 12:30 sometimes, mid-lunch.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. When the oil field was really booming, I think we had like 65, 68 rigs around the county, and we were feeding a lot of those rigs. A lot of that food that went out to the rigs was being bought here. And those were our 12 o'clock sellouts and 12:30 sellouts.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, how did you learn how to barbecue like this?
Growing up, my grandfather, the only experience I had with barbecue to us was like a cooked goat cabrito. It's more the traditional type of barbecue that I grew up on.
Yeah, now, is that barbecue that's buried with nopal leaves?
Yes.
Okay, like in Mexico.
Yeah, so we use burlap sacks instead of...
Yeah, so you literally make a pit in the ground.
That's it. That's how I learned what the barbecue was. And then later on, above ground, with just the embers, cooking on embers and cooking the goats like that. I didn't find out till the brisket later on when I was working with this company, TMPA. It's the Police Association of Austin. I did a lot of traveling, a lot of training for law enforcement across the state. And I started visiting the Central Texas barbecue market down south, lots of McAllen, Mission area, and just kind of pick and chose what I liked and put it all together. I would visit a lot of the backyard barbecue places and the hole in the walls that you make, say, and learned a lot from those pit masters. Just went in there, picked their brain, and just in case my whole future in retiring was I'm going to retire one day and open up my little barbecue place.
So you always knew you wanted to do
this? Yes.
You had it in mind all these years?
It came by necessity sooner than what I thought, and it's been successful since. We're very fortunate and blessed.
So you really had focused on the technique.
Yes.
And that's not easy to learn.
No. A lot of trial and error, a lot of burnt brisket, a lot of undercooked stuff that we found out the hard way. And, you know, once you master something, then you want to buy something bigger, then you have to master that. And how much...
So kicking a small piece of meat is really different from kicking a big piece of meat.
Yes. The larger amount, it's the more attention. Yeah, it's temperatures vary. There's a lot of variances in the pit for temperatures, and you have to have it consistent. You have to know what the pit air intake and exhaust, and you have to kind of learn the pit, and from there, I've kind of passed that information on to my wife and my mother, who tend the barbecue pit when I'm not around, and they seem to be doing a good job.
Oh, I'll say.
They're the pit masters.
And the sauce also is really good.
Oh, good.
Do you guys make that here?
Yes, it's made in-house. We use a base sauce, and then we add our own ingredients, like the hot sauce we actually do here. We cook it here, and our little sweet sauce that we have as well.
It's a sweet sauce and a hot sauce. I'm looking at both. The hot sauce has the caution tape
on it. It's got caution, yes.
It's really hot for some people.
We had folks that had come in, and we did not have the labeling on it.
Oh.
And they would shower their brisket or shower their ribs with it.
Uh-oh.
And be like, that's the wrong bottle, you know. Sorry.
Well, not for me. I like hot sauce. But yeah, it's hot.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, barbecue varies from place to place. Would you say that barbecue, how you do it here west of the Pecos, is different from the barbecue you might find someplace else in Texas?
The foundation's kind of similar, but we do have our own ingredients, our own, I could say, regional type of cooking that we do. I cook it like many other folks in an offset, indirect heat pit, and it's kind of the same technique, just some variances due to where the location, how far out we are from any big trees. We don't have any big trees around, so I have to import a lot of my wood that I use.
Oh, so it's cooked over actual wood?
Yes.
What kind of wood?
Depending on the season, but we use a lot of mesquite, post oak that we get from Brady, out of the San Angelo Brady area. We use some pecan and some cherry wood on the ribs from New Mexico. That's kind of different than what other barbecue restaurants everywhere else.
So it gives the meat a very different flavor.
Yes. Yeah. Flavors vary with the different types of wood. It's like a different spice that you use.
And you prepare the meat before you kick it in
marinade? We use a dry rub, consists of salt and pepper. That's it.
So it's really good quality meat.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes, it is.
It's really, I must say, my respects.
Good. Thank you.
My respects. Well, what is your favorite on the menu here?
I like the pulled pork. we recently just started cooking that about a year and a half ago. The brisket prices started skyrocketing. The beef prices in general started skyrocketing. And we had to kind of go to an alternative meat source to kind of offset the pricing. Pork is generally lesser of a cost than the brisket than the beef. So we went to the pork, and it's worked out really well for us. And that I had never cooked before. And it was a learning experience. I did a lot of studying up on it, and it worked out great. I mean, I've had folks from Georgia, North Carolina, and Memphis, and, you know, Tennessee in that area compliment the pulled pork from the vintage. So it's good. You're doing something right.
Yeah, I'll say so. That was outstanding.
Thank you.
I just about inhaled it.
Thanks.
Well, now, you guys also, apart from Texas Monthly, you're all over TripAdvisor.
Yeah, TripAdvisor.
Do you find that you get people coming in because of that?
Yes. TripAdvisor, Yelp, Urban Spoon, Google. We don't tend to rely a lot on that, but it does draw customers. Hey, I saw you on TripAdvisor. Yeah. And they say, you know what, it's so hard to get 4 or 5 stars, and you guys have 5 stars across the board, or you guys have 10 5-stars. We pay attention to what the customer wants. Other restaurants will tell you, no, that's just, you know, the rumor mill, or that's just wherever. But it's actually what the people are saying, and, you know, the public generally rules, you know, the majority rules. If people are saying good stuff about you, means you're doing good stuff. So, you can't be good all the time, and you can't be bad all the time either. So we take it as it comes, and we move on. We learn from our mistakes. And like I said, it was a lot of trial and error at the beginning.
Well, I know. My husband learned to do a little backyard barbecue, you know, like a Weber.
Yes.
And that was a learning experience. And I didn't do anything except I provided the chimney. You know, I bought him a little chimney. And I mixed up some sauce. Other than that, I have no experience with barbecuing. Okay. But I know that little bit to know that it's not easy to learn how to do it. And to do this quantity every day.
Every day.
How many pounds of meat are you bringing in every day to cook?
Well, we cook at least close to about 300 pounds a day.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yeah. Sometimes we sell it out. Sometimes we don't. We'll call family, hey, come pick up some food. You know, we have some food left over, some sides.
Well, speaking of sides, I noticed that you had pozole.
Yes.
No. Most people outside of Texas and Mexico don't know that.
Yeah.
Do a lot of people order that here?
Yes, they do. And the pozole, I don't know if you... Did you try it?
I didn't try it. I had the green beans and the potatoes.
Yeah, actually, it's a different version of the traditional red sauce with the corn, hominy, and pork. This is just the hominy with some cream and green chilies from New Mexico. It's called the Southwest version of it.
Oh, okay, because in Mexico City, they serve it like a soup.
Like a soup, like menudo.
Yeah, but this is more a side dish.
Yeah.
This is what it sounds good.
Yes.
With chilies and green chilies.
Green chilies, hatch New Mexico chilies, and some cream. And it's white cream. It's really good. It's one of our main sellers, side sellers.
Oh, well, now I feel bad that I didn't try it.
Yeah,
I'll have to come back.
Yeah.
I have another question for you. Do you have any advice for the backyard barbecue guy? You know, somebody just who wants to barbecue in their backyard. Do you have any advice for them of any, the kind of classic mistakes people make?
I would say overspicing the meat. Keep it basic. Don't overspice the meat. And, get you good cuts. You know, let's say you get what you pay for. So if somebody's selling you a $2 steak, it's probably going to taste like a $2 steak.
Good meat. Very simple preparation.
Yes, very simple preparation. Keep it simple. Cook with wood.
Cook with wood.
Yes. Can't beat it. No gas.
No gas at all.
No gas at all.
Wow.
Yeah, just wood. Keep it like the old days. And like I said, it's the whole experience about building a fire, or even charcoal, like Kingsford or BMA charcoal briquettes. Once you get it good and going, generally that won't give you the great taste of wood, good wood. I laugh a lot at buddies of mine, but hey, I bought this one. You know, Kingsford mesquite or Kingsford, you know, oak. It's got pieces of, like, really, by the time you really use it, all that stuff will be burned out of it. Because then you're using the ember, really, for the heat. You don't cook on charcoal that you just lit, because it'll give you that nasty taste
yeah.
to the food. You know?
Yeah.
So you let it, like it says the instructions on the back say, leave it burn until it turns gray. And that means everything's burned out in it except for the heat source. People say, hey, it's got pieces of mesquite embedded in the charcoal. But really, they burn out by the time you...
So if you want to cook with mesquite, you got to cook with the real
cook
thing.
Cook with the real...
With mesquite.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they sell bags at your local grocers. And cook with wood for any type of meat. Chicken, pork, or beef.
Can we have a look at the pit outside?
Yeah.
Oh, a wagon full of meat there. Wow.
Yeah, that's going out. We let it rest a little before we put it in here. We're going to put it in like really, really cold.
Oh, okay. So it's these big barrels,
yeah.
and they open it up with a handle,
yeah.
pulls it up.
That's all the like pepper, and it's offset. See the fires on that side there?
Oh, so the fire's in the smaller that's, barrel on
yeah,
the right.
That's called the firebox.
Okay.
Right here. So all our heat's generated.
Ooh,
right.
That's hot. We're looking at a piece of charred wood and a pile of ash.
Yes.
Okay.
There,
a whole wall full of yeah. the special wood.
That's wood there, and that's oak down in the bottom, live oak. And this is our mesquite wood here from there. It's all from the San Angelo area. Anything we use around here would be like mesquite root. West of Pecos, you know, you hardly get any type of big oak unless you're up around the mountains. And the mesquite wood is really difficult to get, like the big trees, since we only have brush.
Yeah, out here in Pecos, this is brush country.
Brush definitely. Country.
Yeah, I haven't seen many trees.
No.
Certainly not enough for barbecue.
Exactly. We truck these in at Fort Stockton. I don't know if you've been through Fort Stockton.
Yeah, yeah.
They have pecan orchards west of town. And I get a lot of the pecan from that area as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a bigger one there.
I'm looking at a gigantic barrel with a big chimney and three big handles to pull up and put meat in there as well.
Yes.
Oh, and that's the firebox
that's
on
the
right.
Okay.
All,
it's on the same side as the exhaust there, the big pipe exhaust. But it does. It's a called reverse flow. We have a plate that runs right in the middle of that tank there, and it shoots out the heat. And it keeps the heat even. It's an evener. It's even. It's a more even heat as it comes out back to here. So it's really not directed right at this area here of the pit. It runs straight through and then comes back up through the top.
And what time do you guys start cooking in the morning?
We start today. And we cook overnight at a really slow heat. About 245 to around 265. We try to keep it right in between there. And it's got good rendering on the meat. It allows for the fat to render real slowly. It's like a slow, real slow cooking process.
These are not cooked to order. These are cooked a long time in advance.
Yes. We're cooking from here. We'll start at 3, 4 p.m. We'll cook overnight. They'll be ready about 9:30, 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's
why they taste so good.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. This concludes Marfa Monday's podcast number 19, and there will be more until there are 24. Your comments are always welcome. You will find my email, cmmayo@cmmayo.com, on my website, cmmayo.com/marfa. As I mentioned, these podcasts are apropos of my book in progress, World Waiting for a Dream, A Turn in Far West Texas. But if you're listening sometime in the future, it is possible that it has been published. I invite you to check it out, as well as my several other books, at cmmayo.com. And I invite you to surf around in there and listen in anytime to the many other Marfa Mondays podcasts. The most recent podcast, number 18, is an interview with barrel racer Lisa Fernandez at the West of the Pecos Rodeo. Among my favorites is Marfa Monday's podcast number 10, A Visit to Swan House, the Egyptian-inspired adobe teaching house on the U.S.-Mexico border at Presidio. And Marfa Monday's number 7, We Have Seen the Lights, about the Marfa ghost lights phenomena. Until next time.